This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball.
Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 535, Ron Guidry, pitcher for the New York Yankees.
All right, Ron Guidry. And why are we talking about Ron today?
Ron Guidry was amazing. He had one of the best seasons of the 1970s for a pitcher. That was coming just a couple years after he was almost out of baseball. He had basically given up on becoming a Yankee, was mistreated by management, by ownership, and then went on to become one of the greatest Yankees in history. And he might be the first good Yankee that we've talked about. We talked about Tommy John. We talked about some good players who went for a year to the Yankees, Richard Dotson, Ron Kittle, Jack McDowell, Jack Clark. But I think we owe a legitimate great Yankee to Yankees fans.
I don't know, David, I feel like this violates some kind of pact that we've made where we're really only going to cover the Yankees cards that Yankees fans don't want us to.
The Len Sicada rule. But Ron Guidry, I think, is a really interesting and amazing career. Seems like a really good guy, has a connection with one of the greatest players in Yankees history, and he himself became one of the greatest players in Yankee history. By the time that this card came out, though, I think I was too young to know about Ron Guidry's greatness. His best years were between 1978 and 85, and I was too young to have seen his peak. So I wanted to learn some more about him, and he has a great Sabre bio by Joe Wancho. Thank you again to the Sabre community for your great work on the Sabre bio project. And Ron also has a great nickname that we have said every time his name comes up in conversation, Louisiana Lightning. Another great nickname, Gator. Two good nicknames.
Can't go wrong. Let's go to the front of card 535, and we have, finally, after a few weeks of some nonsense, of some strange shots on cards, we get a very traditional Ron Guidry in his windup, in his delivery as a left-handed pitcher. It's an action shot. There's nothing crazy going on. You just have the blurred background of the crowd behind him. Ron in the traditional Yankees pinstripes, the cuffs hiked up very high so you can see the full stirrups. This is just a really nice looking card to me.
Yeah, this is a classic card, classic mustache. Ron Guidry, known for his mustache. Good looking uniform, got some Puma shoes on. He's got an intense stare here.
He does look mean. Let's go to the back of 535. Ron Guidry, pitcher, 5'11", 157, left-handed thrower and batter. Drafted by the Yankees in the third round of 1971. Born August 28th, 1950 in Lafayette, Louisiana, with home in Lafayette, Louisiana.
That name, Guidry, is French from the ancient Germanic personal name, Widrick, composed of the elements wid, wood, forest, and rick, powerful. The surname has died out in France, and the history has Claude Guidry de Griveaux and Laverdieu from France married an Indian woman circa 1680, and Marguerite Petipas in Acadia, circa 1681. The descendants of Claude mainly bear the surname Guidry. Name of French origin and Acadian origin, Guidry was born in Lafayette, Louisiana, and thus that nickname, Louisiana Lightning. Lafayette, named for Marie-Joseph-Paul-Yves-Roch Gilbert du Montier de Lafayette, or the Marquis de Lafayette, the French aristocrat who volunteered to assist the American Revolutionary Forces, became friends with Hamilton, rapped really fast about guns and ships, returned to France where he was part of the French Revolution in the late 1700s and the July Revolution in 1830. The Marquis de Lafayette is buried in Paris under soil from Bunker Hill, a hero of the American Revolution and the French Revolution, well regarded in both countries. The city of Lafayette's motto is the heart of Cajun country, and Guidry is Cajun. The Cajun people are descended from French settlers in Acadia. Acadia was in New France, now Canada, and included parts of the Maritime Provinces, Quebec, and parts of Maine. The Acadians lived in this area from the 1600s into the 1700s when the English took over the area and demanded that Acadians pledge loyalty to the crown. in the 1750s, there were approximately 14,000 Acadians living in this area, and 11,500 of them were deported. When they refused to pledge loyalty to England, they were put on ships and sent away. Also, about 2,500 of them stuck around and kept fighting against the English, worked with the native population to fight against the British occupants. But of those 11,500 that were deported, 5,000 died of disease, shipwreck, starvation. And we discussed this in the Garth Orge episode. I don't know why we were discussing this in the Garth Orge episode.
Why not? Why not?
I think it's because one of my favorite topics of conversation is the epic poem Evangeline by Longfellow. The expulsion of Acadians was described by Longfellow in that epic poem. He describes the story of Evangeline searching for her lost love, Gabriel, and traveling throughout the North American continent to ultimately find him on his deathbed. But definitely look forward to future podcasts about Evangeline. I'm sure it will come up again. The Acadians were initially sent to the colonies, many in Massachusetts, Virginia, Maryland, but not sent to Louisiana, as this was French territory at the time. In the 1760s, the French transferred the Louisiana territory to Spain, and the Spanish were okay with these Acadians moving in and speaking French. They also shared a Catholic faith, and so the Acadians moved en masse to the Louisiana territory. They fought in the American Revolution under Spanish General Galvez, including fighting at the Siege of Baton Rouge. After the Revolution, more Acadians arrived, and over time, the term Acadian, due to rural pronunciation, was shortened to Cajun. But as we think of it today, not all people who are Cajun are descended from Acadians. There's lots of Creole Cajun, Native Cajun, and Afro-Cajun people living in Louisiana, and it's more of a locational rather than a historical definition. Lafayette had 35,000 people in 1950, now over 120,000 people. Ron's parents were descended from that original French Cajun stock, Roland and Mary Grace Guidry. He grew up speaking Cajun French and hunting and fishing on the bayou. His mother kept him close to home, so he didn't play baseball much as a kid, until one day he told his mother that he was going to visit his grandma. And he was always distracted by these boys playing in a field, and he would take a detour past the field just to look in the hopes that he'd be invited to play. And one day he picks up a ball that rolls out of the field, and he threw it back into the infield with such velocity that the coach of the team asked him to join. It turned out that coach was a friend of his dad, and Ron was a natural and took off from there, and really a fantastic athlete all around.
Ron went to Northside High School in Lafayette. Other famous alums, MMA fighter Dustin Poirier, retired MMA fighter and Olympic wrestler Daniel Cormier, and Bryson Bernard. He had a brand new dance. You got to move your muscle. A brand new dance called the Cupid Shuffle. At Northside, Ron played baseball and was a sprinter. On the baseball field, he was a good pitcher. And as a sprinter, he got college scholarship offers. He ran a 9.800 meter dash and triple jumped 45 feet. He decided to stay close to home and attend University of Southwestern Louisiana, which is now the University of Louisiana Lafayette, home of the Ragin' Cajuns. He focused on baseball and as a freshman went 5-1 with a 1.57 ERA. And when he wasn't pitching, he played center field and had a decent bat. As a sophomore, he went 7-4 and struck out more than a batter per inning. He missed most of his junior year with tendonitis in his throwing arm, but Yankee scout Atlee Donald saw enough to recommend drafting Ron. Atlee Donald had pitched for Louisiana Tech when he was in college and then for the Yankees. Donald threw 95 miles an hour in the 1930s and once won 12 straight games as a rookie, which was an AL record, and then spent 29 years scouting for the Yankees and passed away in 1992 at the age of 82.
Donald saw a 5'11", 150-pound Guidry throw. There were also Dodger and Red Sox scouts there. Donald would remember his initial thoughts of Guidry and say, "At that age, you hope he'll put on a little weight. I was afraid he was a little light for a major leaguer, but other guys have been good pitchers. But even though he was a little light, he gave you 100%. He could play, he was an athlete, he could run, throw, and hit, but his arm is why I recommended him as high as I did." Guidry was throwing 95 despite his thin frame, and Ron said that he had been contacted by every team in the majors except the Reds and Yankees. And he was disappointed because he knew of the big history of the Yankees, and he thought, why won't they look at me? Atlee Donald was keeping his cards close to his vest. He was one of the few scouts who knew that Guidry was actually draft eligible. Ron had not enrolled for the spring semester in 1971, so he was eligible for the June draft even though he was only a junior. Most of the teams didn't know that, and Donald had the inside track and didn't want to let on, and so the Yankees took Guidry in the third round of the 1971 draft, 67th overall, despite the fact that Ron hadn't pitched that year.
But the Yankees snapped him up. Guidry was about to turn 21, so the Yankees sent him to Johnson City for rookie ball. He also enlisted in the National Guard that year and was active until 1977. Not a bad idea given some of the military things that were happening in the country in 1971. At Johnson City, he struck out 61 batters in 47 innings and had a 2.11 ERA. He also walked a fair number, and control would be an issue for him early on. His minor league numbers, other than strikeouts, the next few seasons were not that impressive, really. At A-ball in 1972, he was 2-4 with a 3.82 ERA and a 1.561 whip, walking 50 batters in 66 innings. He did get married that year to a woman named Bonnie, and they're still married today. 1973, he was back in A-ball, and his whip was still over 1.5. Then he was moved up to AA West Haven and spent some time in the bullpen, and that really didn't help either. In 37 appearances, his ERA went up to 5.26, giving up more than a hit per inning. But they must have seen something in him. For some reason, he was moved up to AAA Syracuse still. And at Syracuse, his manager was a guy who would have some good success with pitchers in his career, a guy named Bobby Cox.
And Bobby Cox must have helped him with his control. Initially, Cox made Guidry the closer, and he was good. In 42 games, he had 14 saves and a 2.9 ERA. He limited base runners and didn't give up a home run in 62 innings. And that earned him a call-up to the Bronx in July. Well, check that. He was actually called up to Shea Stadium because the Yankees were playing their home games while Yankee Stadium was under construction in Queens. So they play the Red Sox at Shea Stadium. Guidry pitches two scoreless innings and a 6-0 loss. And he also picked up a nickname from one of his teammates, Dick Tidrow.
He tells me to go in the bullpen. I go in the bullpen and then I introduce myself. They get me talking about where I'm from. And when one, I don't remember who asked me, what do you have a lot of in Louisiana? And I said, well, we got a lot of rain. We got a lot of snakes. We got a lot of alligators. And then all of a sudden, you know, somebody just went like, well, we'll just call you Gator. You know, and I'm going, that's perfect. That's fine. And then about the same time I did that, all of a sudden my foot got hot and I looked down. They had, one of them was giving me a nickname and the other one had lit up my shoelaces. So I got initiated into the club real quick.
He said that he preferred to be called Gator, even though later he would get what we think is his iconic nickname of Louisiana Lightning. But he liked to be called Gator because that was from his teammates. He also picked up something important this year. He learned a slider from teammate Sparky Lyle to go along with his fastball. A week after he gets called up, George Steinbrenner fires Bill Verdon and hires Billy Martin for the first time. I don't think we're going to go through all of the hirings and firings of Billy Martin. That would add another 10 minutes of this onto this podcast. Martin didn't like rookies, so he just bullied Ron Guidry. He didn't talk to him, and he just totally ignores him. Guidry appears in 10 games, and he pitched pretty well that first year. So going into 1976, he hopes to have another stint in New York, but the Yankees had acquired some veterans, and he was the odd man out after spring training. He goes back to Syracuse, and in 11 games, he's 3-1 with a 1.37 ERA. He's called back to New York in late May, and again, Billy Martin wants nothing to do with him. He ignores a report from Bobby Cox that said Guidry had just pitched a few days in a row and that he should have some days off, and Martin puts him in immediately against the rival Red Sox. It's the ninth inning, the Yankees are down 4-2, and Guidry gives up four runs without recording an out. Guidry knew that he was set up for failure because Martin wanted more experienced players, and he said it was clear he didn't like me. Steinbrenner also told him, "Guidry, you'll never be able to pitch in this league." But Ron did make a friend with a Yankee legend who had a locker next to his, and that was Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra is brought in as a coach. Also there, another Yankee catcher legend, Elston Howard, and the three would become good friends. They would talk a lot, and they had a lot of time to talk because for the next 2 months, Ron Guidry did not pitch a game in the major leagues. He sat in the bullpen for 47 games without a single inning. He practiced his slider, learned some more from his veteran teammates, and got angry and embarrassed.
They sent him back to Syracuse, and Ron and Bonnie packed their car, but Ron was ready to quit. He was thinking maybe he would drive back to Louisiana. He said, "If this is what the Yankees think I'm worth, I might as well go back home and get a job. I'm 25. Life is flying by. I can't afford to wait until I'm 30 years old to begin making a living for my family." Bonnie talked some sense into him. She said, "You've never quit on anything you thought you could do in your life. Don't quit on your own. Let the Yankees tell you you're no good before you think of quitting." Ron took her advice. He decided to return to Syracuse and handle what was in his own control. And he was great that year. At AAA, he had an 0.68 ERA in 22 appearances with good control, less than 3 walks per 9 innings compared to 5.4 walks per 9 innings the previous season. He was recalled to the bigs and pitched in 6 more games, all of them losses, but lowered his ERA from 108 to 5.63. He was on the postseason roster in 1976, but did not appear in the ALCS, on the mound at least. In a Game 4 loss to the Royals, he was called on a pinch run, but the Yankees were swept by the Reds in the World Series, and Guidry did not appear. In the offseason, the Yankees acquired Bucky Dent, and Guidry's name was proposed as a potential trade chip, but club president Gabe Paul said he would only allow it if the Yankees issue a press release saying that I, Gabe Paul, unalterably oppose the trade, and that you, George Steinbrenner, insist on it, and that when, not if, but when, Ron Guidry becomes an outstanding major league pitcher for another team, you take the blame.
Gabe Paul insisted that the team not trade Ron Guidry, even though Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner were convinced that this guy's garbage. Guidry remains on the team. He starts in the bullpen. After a couple weeks, he ends up getting a start against Seattle. And this is his first major league start, and he had one start in 1975. Basically, he hadn't made multiple starts in a season since AA. And he gets thrown into the Yankees rotation. He goes 8 1/3 scoreless innings against Seattle. By mid-May, he is permanently in the rotation. He finishes the season 16-7 with a 2.82 ERA, a 140 ERA plus. Billy Martin just said, "This is all part of the plan. We knew we were going to bring Ron Guidry along slowly." The Yankees win 100 games, and Ron is their best starter. He pitches a complete game 3-hitter in ALCS Game 2. Then he was knocked out of Game 4 after giving up 3 runs in 2 innings. The Yankees came back to win that game and take the ALCS, and they get to the World Series once more.
The Yankees hadn't won a World Series since 1962, and they're facing the Dodgers. They were ahead 2-1 when Guidry got his first World Series start in Game 4. He went the distance, giving up 4 hits and only 2 runs in a 4-2 win. The Yankees would take the series in 6 games, giving Ron Guidry his first World Series ring. And Ron earned some praise from his good friend, manager Billy Martin. He said, "I can't say enough about him. He's one of the hardest left-handed throwers in baseball, and he's just as good as a guy there." You know, what to say about Billy Martin's transformation here? I guess, you know, Ron was no longer a rookie, so he, you know, if he just doesn't like rookies and it takes him a few years to really warm up to them, maybe this is just a good-natured, you know, transformation, David.
Or Billy Martin's just a jerk. Just a real jerk. And, you know, now he looks good because they win the World Series and he's got this new ace pitcher who he bullied into almost quitting baseball, and then, you know, comes back around. It's such an abusive cycle happening in New York between Steinbrenner and Martin, and then Martin passing it along. And we know a lot about Billy Martin now, and we know about his issues with alcohol and his volatile behavior. It's just really quite sad knowing what we know about Ron Guidry, who seems to be a pretty nice guy, that he got caught up in the middle of this. And as we'll get to later, this slow walking may have impacted Ron Guidry's Hall of Fame credentials and impacts the way that we think about Ron Guidry when we look at his stats, because he didn't get started until he was 26 years old. He had electric stuff. He was a great pitcher. He just needed a shot, and instead they just ignored him and left him in the bullpen. Maybe that also gave him a chance to pick up a great slider, but you know, he might have figured that out if they had just given him a shot. He was a great athlete. This SI article described him as sinewy. He got his velocity from his drive off his left leg, and so that strength in his legs from being a sprinter was valuable on the pitching mound. He also worked quickly and showed confidence on the mound, which threw batters off because he knew exactly what he was going to throw next. He just stood there chewing tobacco, waiting for the batter to be ready. Sometimes that Cajun French would come out. If he threw a bad pitch, he'd say, "Pas bon," French for not good. Yankees fans were also excited to finally have a strikeout pitcher. When Guidry got to the Yankees, the record for strikeouts was 239 by Jack Chesbrough in 1904. Whitey Ford had over 200 strikeouts once in his career. Al Downing did it, but they weren't really known for having power pitchers, and so Guidry became a star because of his velocity.
Yeah, 176 strikeouts that 1977 season, and he would break 240 strikeouts the next year. But in 1977, Guidry was still technically a rookie because of poor management by the Yankees, and also because he had only pitched 31 innings prior to 1977. But while he received some Cy Young votes and got 7th in that voting, and some MVP votes, 18th in the American League MVP race, he didn't get any Rookie of the Year votes. Maybe because this was his third year in the majors and he was 26 years old and voters just couldn't believe that he was actually a rookie, or just didn't cross their mind that it was possible. That great rookie season was a prelude to one of the best pitching seasons of the decade, 1978. This was a tumultuous season for the Yankees, up and down the whole year, but Ron Guidry was spectacular throughout. His finest performance was a shutout on June 17th. Prior to the game, he told the teammates he didn't really have much. He talked to Yogi and Elston, his buddies, who told him, "Listen, you're 10-0, just do what you do and you'll be fine." This was at home against the Angels, a good Angels team with Bobby Gritch, Don Baylor, Brian Downing, and Guidry shut them down.
There's a video of every strikeout in this game, and the crowd is just building with every strikeout, and it's just getting louder and louder and louder.
Good crowd here at the stadium tonight, and they're going to be behind Guidry on every pitch that he throws. And he's going to swing away now and strikes out. He foul tipped it in Munson's mitt. So Guidry picks up his first strikeout of this ball game. Listen to the crowd now. On every two-strike count, you'll hear him. The 1-2 pitch. He struck him out. Strike three is called. And Guidry gets out of the jam. Well, the Red Sox at the moment are 7.5 games ahead of the Yankees. 2-2 pitch will be coming. And he struck him out. Third strikeout for Guidry.
Eighth strikeout for Guidry, and there are two outs. Here's the 1-2 pitch to Redmond. Swung on and missed. Guidry has struck out the side. That's his ninth strikeout. 2-2 pitch. Swung on and missed. Got him with a high fastball.
And the noise builds up.
As he leaves the mound, setting the team record with 18 strikeouts, Phil Rizzuto calls him the Louisiana Lightning Man. He goes to see Yogi and Elston in the dugout. They're there to congratulate him. Yogi says, "See, there's nothing more for us to tell you." Nolan Ryan, no slouch himself, was in the Angels dugout, and he was shocked. He said that kid was overpowering. Also in this game, where Phil Rizzuto got that idea for Louisiana Lightning, there was a sign that a fan was holding up in the stands, and that gave Guidry that new nickname. July 2nd, Ron is 13-0 with a 1.75 ERA. Those 13 straight wins broke the Yankee record held by that scout, Atlee Donald, who signed Ron Guidry. At the All-Star break, the Yankees were 14 games behind Boston, despite Ron's 13-1 record. He made his first All-Star game. Billy Martin was the manager. I'm not sure if this was another rookie hazing technique, but he only got to pitch to one batter. It might have just been management because of the timing of the All-Star game. So he pitches to Willie Stargell, gets him to fly out, and then the next inning he's pulled. By late July, Billy Martin had been fighting Reggie Jackson and George Steinbrenner all year. He steps down with the team in fourth place. Bob Lemon comes in, and the team goes 41-16 in August and September. They take a one-game lead into the last game of the season. They lose to Cleveland. Boston beats Toronto to force a one-game playoff. And of course, the Yankees have to go with their 24-3 starter, the Gator.
And he was as calm as can be. He said, "I never at any moment of the day felt like the world would end if we didn't win. I went out with the same philosophy as always, just do the best job that I can do." And he did. He went 6 1/3, left the game up 4-2, thanks to Bucky effing Dent's home run. And Guidry gets the win to finish the season, an amazing 25-3 record with a 1.74 ERA. That's a 208 ERA plus, setting Yankee records for the best lefty ERA, best winning percentage, most strikeouts with 248, and most shutouts with 9. Guidry's strikeout record stood until 2022 when Gerrit Cole broke it. He also had a whip under 1, 0.946, and allowed only 13 home runs in 273 innings, which is astounding. In terms of WAR, this is the 10th best season of the 1970s, with a 9.6 WAR. Everyone ahead of him threw more innings. Guys like Phil Niekro, Gaylord Perry, Steve Carlton, and Wilbur Wood, who all threw more than 330 innings. While Guidry threw only 273, so with like 20% more innings. That's astoundingly good. With that win on the 163rd game of the season, the Yankees make the ALCS again against the Royals.
In Game 4, Guidry throws 8 innings. The Yankees win 2-1 to send them to a rematch with the Dodgers. After dropping the first two games, Ron takes the mound in Game 3 at home. He pitches a complete game, allows one run in a 5-1 win. It's a remarkable one-run performance because he gave up 7 walks and 8 hits. So he allows 15 base runners, but only one run thanks to some clutch pitching. He got out of multiple bases-loaded jams by forcing grounders, and that win turns the tide for the Yankees. They won the next 3 to win back-to-back titles.
So 2 rings. Guidry was the unanimous Cy Young choice. He also finished 2nd in the MVP race to Jim Rice, but received 8 first-place votes. He did win the Sporting News Major League Player of the Year. In the offseason, Guidry was back home in Louisiana doing one of his favorite things when SI caught up with him. He was playing pickup touch football in a park during a downpour for 3 hours. Everyone else would have quit, but they were playing with the Cy Young winner. They said, "We got to keep going." He joked with SI that he'd switch from baseball to football, and he said he could be a good defensive back. He was also maybe the fastest player on the Yankees, faster than Mickey Rivers and Willie Randolph, thanks to that history as a sprinter. Guidry said, "I'm strongest in my legs. A few times I pinch ran, so I'd love to steal, but they never let me."
Just a competitive guy and a guy who, at home in Louisiana, was playing pickup touch football against high school kids. Just a very down-to-earth guy. He comes back out in 1979 and has a very good year, finishing 18-8. Again, leading the league with a 2.78 ERA, but the Yankees finished in fourth place, and they experienced a tragedy as Captain Thurman Munson perished in a plane crash in August. Guidry had a close relationship with Munson, as pitchers and catchers do. He said Thurman's skills and knowledge of the game were exceptional, but what really separated him was that he understood everybody's psychology. As a catcher, he had the unique ability of knowing what it took for each pitcher to get through the inning or the game. So despite losing his catcher and the emotional team toll that that must have taken on Ron and the Yankees, he still finished 3rd in AL Cy Young voting and also was a team player. When Goose Gossage went down injured, Ron went to the bullpen and picked up a couple saves. So he's just willing to do whatever it takes for his team. 1980, by his standards, was a down year. He was 12-9, but his ERA was up to 3.71 through August 12th. He had 3 losses in a row, and he decided he should go back to the bullpen to work on some mechanics. In 8 appearances, he had an ERA under 2, went back into the rotation, and finished the year with 4 straight wins. And those were vital wins as the Yankees won 103 games, but the second-place Orioles won 100 games. So this came really down to the wire, and Guidry's performance at the end of the season was helpful to the Yankees, again, getting back to the playoffs. They faced the Royals, but this time the Royals get the better of them and sweep the Yankees, with Guidry losing Game 1, getting pulled after 3 innings.
1981 was the strike season. The Yankees won the AL East in the first half, so they would make the playoffs, and then they finished 5th in the second half of the season. Guidry, Tommy John, Dave Rigetti, and Rick Rushel were the rotation, very solid. Ron led the team with 11 wins and 104 strikeouts. In the playoffs against the Brewers, Ron started games 1 and 5. He pitched 4 innings in both, so he didn't get a decision. But the Yankees won both games, with game 5 sending them to the ALCS against the A's. Ron didn't pitch against Billy Martin's A's in a 3-game sweep. And now the Yankees are in yet another World Series against the Dodgers. Ron took the mound in game 1 and gave up 1 hard run on 4 hits in a 5-3 win. The Yankees won game 2. The Dodgers took games 3 and 4 to even the series. And Ron's back on the mound in game 5, striking out 9 in 7 innings and allowing 2 runs. But unfortunately for him, Jerry Royce was even better for LA, allowing only 1 run in a complete game. The Dodgers would win game 6 to win the title, and this would be Guidry's last playoff appearance.
Ron had a solid 1982. He went 14-8, but his ERA has ticked up a bit. I guess you can't expect it under 3 ERA every year. 3.81, an ERA plus of only 104, so he's close to league average. He's allowing more base runners. He's getting those wins, but this Yankees team slipped under 500 as the team aged and struggled to replace that core. Guidry was an all-star and won the first of 5 straight gold gloves. In 1983, he was a 20-game winner again, winning 21 for the third-place Yankees. He had a 2-hitter, a couple of 3-hitters. He pitched a lot, 250 innings, and led the league with 21 complete games. That included 9 straight complete games in July and August. He made another All-Star game, won a Gold Glove, finished 5th in Cy Young voting, but off the field, he had a difficult year, and this ties into something that's been happening just very recently in baseball with Shohei Ohtani's situation. Ron had a trusted friend who was managing Ron Guidry Enterprises. This guy also served as his agent and attorney. Ron owned a bunch of different businesses, a photo studio, cleaning business, tool company, real estate. But this friend misspent his money, and Ron was nearly bankrupt. He had just signed a 4-year deal worth $4 million, and his money was gone. Ron spent a lot of his time trying to work with creditors to avoid bankruptcy, and it was a really scary situation for him. He ended up coming out of it okay on the other side, but it really just must have been heartbreaking for him to have this close friend spend his money in a way and almost drive him into bankruptcy.
1984, the Yankees brought in Yogi Berra to manage the team. Ron was 33 years old, and for the first time in his career, he missed significant time due to an injury. He finished the year 10-11 with a 4.51 ERA. That was his first sub-500 season and the first ERA he had over 4 for his career. But despite the disappointing results, Ron was recognized for his off-the-field charitable work, receiving the Roberto Clemente Award. Ron had a younger brother named Travis who was severely mentally disabled, and Ron dedicated a lot of time and resources to the Special Olympics in honor of Travis. He said, "I trade every significant achievement I've ever had to see Travis progress and lead a reasonably normal life. He is the one who has made the truly significant achievements." So a great recognition for Ron's work off the field and that cause. 1985, Guidry bounced back. He got his last black ink on the card as he leads the American League with 22 wins, and his ERA dropped to 3.27. His velocity was diminished at this point. He's 34 years old, but he had great control, allowing a career-low 1.5 walks per 9 innings. The team was only 6-10 through 16 games, so George Steinbrenner fires Yogi Berra, leading to a rift that would last nearly 15 years. But the Yankees won 97 games that year, losing the division to the Blue Jays by 2 games. And that was the last complete season of Ron Guidry's career.
1986, he starts 30 games, but he misses significant time in July, finishes 9-12 with a 103 ERA plus. He won his final Gold Glove. 1987, the last line on the card, he only started 17 games, and in 1988, only 10. So combined between those two seasons, 173 innings. Basically every season other than the strike season, between 1977 and 86, he threw more than those two seasons combined. So age and workload finally caught up to him. He had a bone spur in his elbow that required surgery after 1988, but he still expected to be back with the Yankees, wanted to give it another try in 1989, but he didn't get along with manager Dallas Green. Guidry always used spring training as just that, a training session. He wasn't concerned about results. He just wanted to get into shape and be ready to go. And he didn't perform well in 1989, and he was sent to AAA. After seven games, he was okay. His ERA was around 4, but he just decided to call it a career.
So closing the book on Ron Guidry, 14 seasons in the majors, all for the Yankees, a record of 170 wins and 91 losses, 1,778 strikeouts, and a lifetime ERA of 3.29, which was an ERA plus of 119. He won the AL Cy Young, 4-time AL All-Star, 5-time Gold Glove, 2 ERA titles, and 2 World Series rings. What about in retirement?
Ron and Bonnie had 3 kids and lived in Lafayette. He spent time hunting, fishing, spending time with his family. Sometimes he would coach, including with an independent league team called the Lafayette Bayou Bullfrogs for 1 year. He was a guest instructor at Yankee spring training in the 90s, and then Joe Torre brought him in as a pitching coach in 2006. That only lasted a couple seasons, but he continued to help out at spring training and still appears at a lot of Yankees events and on Yankees broadcasts sometimes doing interviews. He wrote an autobiography in 2018 called Gator.
And how about for the Hall of Fame?
Ron was on the ballot for 9 years, but he never got more than 8.8%. In 2002, he dropped below 5% to 4.9%, and so he didn't get a 10th and final shot at the Hall of Fame.
So, David, we started the show with a look at a classic look on the front of a card, a lanky pitcher, the great mustache, and we've ended up now with someone who had one of the best pitching seasons in the 1970s and a real powerful pitcher. Now, after looking at it more, what should we think?
In 1978, Ron Guidry was the best pitcher in baseball. His peak from 1977 to 1985, in that 9-year stretch, he won more games than any pitcher in the majors. He went 154-67 with a 3.15 ERA. In wins above replacement, he was second over that stretch to Phil Niekro. But as you just said, for his career, he was 170-91. So that peak basically represented almost all of his career value. Because he didn't get started in the majors until he's 26, due to Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner impacting his psyche and his career stats, and probably his Hall of Fame credentials. If you look at the Hall of Fame stats on Baseball Reference, Guidry is 110th in Jaws ranking among starting pitchers. And that's mostly because his career WAR and his stats are much lower than the average Hall of Famer. But that peak stretch was also not quite as high as other Hall of Famers. He had the one amazing year and a handful of very good to great years, but he didn't quite make it. I think he has an argument just as one of the best pitchers of a decade, but that's similar to a guy like Dave Steeb, who was the best pitcher of the 1980s and hasn't really gotten a fair shake at a Hall of Fame opportunity. And maybe this also goes to a thing that we don't like to talk about around here, which is defending the Yankees and saying that the Yankees are maybe underrepresented in the Hall of Fame in certain eras. Ron, Greg Nettles, Willie Randolph, Thurman Munson, none of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. And they were all some of the best, if not the best, at their position for a decade, and they never got a chance to be in the Hall of Fame. And if there was really a Yankees bias, they would probably be in there. Ron Guidry had an opportunity on the biggest stage, under the brightest lights, in the biggest city, and it didn't catapult him into the Hall of Fame, even though he was the guy on those teams that won multiple World Series. Maybe also he didn't have the moments in the World Series that we think of with other guys who have short peaks or shorter careers. He was very good, In four games, he was 3-1 with a 1.69 ERA in the World Series. He was never the MVP of a series and only started more than one game in 1981, the series that the Yankees lost. So he's 110th on the Jaws leaderboard between David Wells and Jim Cott. Jim Cott's now in the Hall of Fame, but that's due to him playing 25 seasons and having nearly 300 wins. Guidry didn't have that longevity. He's in good company there with guys that we like and guys that people who really pay attention like. Guys like Jimmy Key and Wilbur Wood and Frank Viola, King Felix, are all right in that area that's just not quite Hall of Fame tier. Joe Posnanski had him at number 85 of players not in the Hall, and he put it perfectly, I think. Guidry only won 170 games in his career, which all but disqualified him in the minds of many Hall of Fame voters. But from 1977 to 1985, Guidry was markedly better than many pitchers currently in the Hall of Fame. But with the Yankees, Ron is a legend. On Baseball Reference, he's 15th in wins above replacement for the Yankees, 4th among pitchers, in the top 10 in wins, strikeouts, starts, innings, and shutouts. His 1978 season is probably the best pitching season in Yankees history. I'm throwing out Jack Chesbrough's 1904, even though him and Russ Ford are ahead of him on the WAR leaderboard, because Jack Chesbrough threw 454 innings, and Russ Ford was known as the developer of the Emery ball. So I'm going to say that a guy who basically cheated before there were rules, and a guy who threw 450 innings because they didn't care about people's health and well-being, those don't count. We're going to say that Ron Guidry's season gets bumped above those because he, you know, was playing in the 1970s. And those guys played for two second-place teams where Ron's season was both amazing and also important because that team was a total mess. They fired their manager. Reggie Jackson was suspended for fighting with ownership, with management. And Ron just went out every few days and lit it up. Even games that he didn't finish, he gave the Yankees a chance to win. They were 30-5 in games that he appeared on the mound. He was on the mound in that decisive game against the rival Red Sox, one of the most important games at the time for Yankees fans. And for that reason, he holds an important place in Yankees' hearts. Earlier this year, Pinstripe Alley put a list of 100 best Yankees of all time. Guidry is number 12. Very high, considering the number of Hall of Famers in Yankees team history. And in 2003, Ron's number 49 was retired, and he was given a plaque in Monument Park. And he said, "This will probably be my toughest game. Trying to tell you how much I appreciate today, I spent 3 hours working on my speech, and I don't think it's going to do me any good. The only regret I've had since I retired in 1988 is that I never had a chance to say goodbye to all the great Yankee fans. When you clapped when there were two strikes on the batter, I just want you to know I heard that." Ron used that power from Yankee Stadium to get so many strikeouts, to put up so many great moments, and that honor and those fans meant so much to him. The team and the management tried to run him out of town in the 1970s, but he never blamed that on the fans, and he never gave up. Willie Randolph said that Ron Guidry, pound for pound, was the fiercest competitor I ever played with. Nobody wanted to give him a chance when he came up. Too skinny, too small, they all thought. They couldn't see what he had in heart. And going back to Ron's friendship with Yogi Berra, I think a person that all of us who would listen to this podcast know and love, Yogi Berra got run out of town, said he would never go back to Yankee spring training, and then finally in 1999, George Steinbrenner apologizes. Ron runs into Yogi and asks him if he's going to spring training, and he told him, "Tell me your itinerary," and Ron picked him up at the airport. So at spring training 1999, from that point on, Ron Guidry was Yogi Berra's chauffeur until Yogi's death in 2015. This led to a book called Driving Mr. Yogi, released in 2012, and Ron was always there, at the crack of dawn, picking him up, driving him to spring training, driving him around in a golf cart, and taking care of his old friend. And when Yogi passed away, Ron shared memories of his old friend. He didn't need to help Yogi out. The Yankees have enough money. They could afford to hire Yogi Berra a driver. He said, "I looked at it as a reward. How many people would do anything to spend so much time with Yogi? He was the best." And Ron Guidry is just one of the best players and best characters in modern Yankees history.
Just a great example of someone who really enjoyed the game, really enjoyed his team, really enjoyed his teammates, the kind of player that as a kid you'd want to idolize. So I think what makes for a really good show for us. So thank you, David, for the story today. And thank you to you at home. If you've ever been driven around in a golf cart by a Cajun Gator, we'd love to hear all about it. Tell us about it on our Facebook page. We're at 1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.